Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We call this the Talkback segment because it's all about the people around the United States and Canada who can call in on our special toll-free number at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888, and share any comment, insight, perspective, question that they wish. No guest, no in-depth investigation, not even an in-depth commentary. It's more about health, healing, and social issues. Today, the latest on cancer of the brain and what we can do to help as a natural treatment. Also, there's a new study out showing what really happens inside your brain from mercury, especially maternal transfer of mercury to the developing embryo and fetus. There is no such thing as a safe level. Why have they been telling us that it is? I'll give you the latest from toxicological and environmental chemistry. It's probably doubtful more than five people ever read something like this. This is where I go every day. Read the original scientific literature, especially that which is independent and not done by any special interest group. Also today, the latest studies on genetically modified maize and cancer. I'll tell you about that as well. Needless to say, the GM industry is in an uproar and fighting back and going to try to slander the people involved. We'll give you the facts on it. So let's begin. The first thing up is cancer. Now, we can go into lung cancer, prostate, breast, skin, melanomas, sarcomas, lymphomas. But at the end of the day, what we're dealing with is really simple. A DNA has been altered. The question is, what alters DNA? Well, there's no shortage. If you are drinking, it alters your DNA. Every single drink. Well, then, why weren't we told? Because it's virtually impossible to predict who's going to end up having a DNA that will manifest in cancer from a single item. And that's how they've gotten away with it. For over 100 years, the tobacco industry said you can't prove that that person smoking contributed to that cancer. Indeed, when you look at the other things in a person's diet or lifestyle that can contribute to cancer, smoking might be one of 200 items. For example, every hot dog, hamburger, french fry, every pizza, pretzel, bagel, and piece of toast, every piece of bacon, and all that contributes to cancer. And the literature is there that you could actually make an argument that when you cook meat or animal proteins, you create a chemical known as heterocyclic amine. That's known to cause cancer. The trouble is there's no way of predicting who will get that cancer and when. Also, there's many other things in the background. For example, if you're a flight attendant or a pilot, you're far more likely to develop cancer. Why? Because at the altitude that you're at, you're getting background radiation substantially more than the average person. When you consider how frequently they're in the sky, then I would absolutely guess that the vast majority will end up with some form of either autoimmune condition or cancer because the body cannot handle that type of background radiation without it causing. The trouble is everything has to reach a tipping point before you manifest a disease. But isn't that also true with everything else in life? Think of your divorce or your separation from your essential partner. Did it come from one argument, one misunderstanding, one screaming match? No, never. That was the final one that broke the back, but there have been dozens, hundreds, or thousands before that. And even though you can make up and say you're sorry or accept someone else's being sorry, it is still a change in the quality of the energy that was shared. But at a certain point, your mind, your authentic mind, not your conditioned mind, that can be easily manipulated, through which about 95% of all our activities and thoughts in the day are processed, says, it isn't worth it. I don't care what I thought I was getting out of this relationship. Going through this abuse isn't worth anything. I'm out of here. Whether it's the man or woman. And the same is true when someone gets fired. It's almost never for one screw-up. It is the final screw-up that you pay attention to, but you didn't pay attention to all the ones before then. So what I'm saying is that in life, virtually everything we do is cumulative, positive or negative, or some combination. The bad thing is when it's a combination. It's relatively easy to deal with people who just screw up all the time. Malcontents, toxic, negative, emotional people. They don't have any place to hide. So when you point something out, it's there. And they've learned to adapt to it and learn to live with it. In fact, it was one of the listeners in this audience who wrote me about a meeting that I had in a play at intermission. I remember it because this was a person who years before had been a friend of mine. But based upon this person's chronically hostile nature and tend to be negative about people and gossiping, there came a point where that was it. There was no more. Gone. So I'm no longer going to be your friend. Hard things to say. You don't want to say it, but you don't want to leave any possibility someone's going to think that somehow you really didn't mean it. You say, you know, I'm forward now. No longer going to work on this friendship. The interesting part of that conversation was when the person said, they saw me in a theater, and I was with my brother and friends, and came over, and they went back in to see the movie, and this person went on and on and on with his wife. And here was the takeaway message for me that was so important. He's, yeah, you know, I felt crappy, you know, when all your friends and you finally rejected me. And then another person who I was in a relationship with, who was a psychologist after a year and a half, rejected me because I was so negative. But now I want to tell you, I am very happy. And my wife is very happy because we don't pretend to like anybody. We don't pretend to like anything. In effect, we have found happiness in being the very thing that you hate, Gary. Gossipy, negative, toxic people. But we have a whole lot more of us out there than you. And that really floored me. I mean, Jesus, when does someone tell you that they're happy being toxic? And I said, well, I got to thank you because you're honest. So few people are honest about, you know, their real nature. You're not, and I've said this many times, I'm sure you've heard me say, if someone steals from you but not someone else, are they a thief? Well, of course they're a thief, and if they lie to you but don't lie to someone else, are they a liar? So sometimes people don't get the message because they have not personally been the victim. But if someone else is the victim and they see someone else has been a victim, then you got to figure the fact that you haven't been a victim doesn't mean that the person is not a victimizer. But almost always someone has a rationalization, excuse, a whole series of excuses and justifications. But what about those people who say, hey, I like being toxic, negative, bad-mouthing people, gossiping. We love that. That's what holds our relationship together. That's what makes us feel good about the world. We never see anything positive. And this was the conversation that was had in the lobby that it was so interesting that I didn't go back into the play. That really burned my brother because my brother did not like this guy. And came out and says, you know, that's enough, and grabbed my arm, and we walked out of the thing. Now, think of that for a moment. Think of someone who will say something negative and then say, but that's not really who they are. Do something negative, but say, well, I'm really not that person. When that's who they are, you are what you do. We have to be honest about this. We have a whole nation in denial. Well, I want what's best for what your kid. Then why is your kid fat? Whose fault's that? The kids? No, you. Do you want the kid to have diabetes? Well, of course not. Well, what do you think the outcome of that's going to be? Sooner or later, it's going to tip into diabetes, heart disease. Do you want to be broke? Well, of course not. then why at Christmas time are you buying these stupid gifts for people you really don't like to accumulate debt out of some socialized guilt? How stupid is that? And yet all the time, we do just the opposite of what we say and wonder why things go so very bad for us. Well, they go bad for us because we have so many things accumulate that it finally tips. At the point where something tips, you lose your life, you lose your marriage, you lose your relationships, your friendships, your job. The environment is lost. The value of our currency is lost. Our reputation around the world is lost. Our human rights are lost. Our constitutional rights are lost. It didn't just happen. How many things preceded that we didn't want to pay attention to? So that's that whole notion about cancer. So when someone is surprised they have cancer, don't be. Because all you had to do is get out of your conditioned mind and look at the choices you've made, and you'll see it's right there. It was just too many of the wrong choices that in the moment didn't cause cancer, but later did. In the moment, didn't cause non-alcoholic fatty liver, all those fructose drinks, but then it did. And that's how it works, and that's pretty much how everything in life works. So why not ask ourselves, well, I don't want that kind of outcome. I want a better outcome. I want to be happy and be around happy people and positive people and do wonderful things. Okay, then that's all you should do. What do you mean? Well, you shouldn't be a screw-up. You shouldn't be saying you want to do something right and then do everything wrong. Because you are what you're going to do. So just stop before you compulsively go back to that old mindset and do something stupid. And then wonder why you've had this outcome. Just have some spiritual discipline. The stop, go to neutral, and think of the likely outcome of what you're going to say or do. And then own it. And then it'd be a totally different world for you and the people around you. In any case, Science Daily, through the University of California research, has come up with a new study on what is called a cannabinoid. The cannabinoid, of course, comes from the cannabis plant or the marijuana plant. It's a synthetic cannabinoid called dexcannabinol, and they deliver it through an intravenous infusion. And it's being used to treat people with various forms of brain cancer, both primary and metastatic. Quote, in this phase one study, they'll be examining the safety of multiple doses and how far it can penetrate the brain. And so a whole new idea, because for a long time there's been scientific research on the anti-cancer properties of hemp. So let's see where this goes. Now, Chinese medicine is one of the oldest forms of medicine practiced. And now, finally, Science Daily is sharing something with us. And here's what it says. Are the longevity and vitality of traditional Chinese medicine due to its holistic approach? Indeed, Chinese medicine is not simply about treating illness, but rather about taking care of the whole person, the body, mind, and spirit. That's according to an analysis done at Beijing Normal University and Chengcheng Zhang from the University of China. And it says spirituality is the key to Chinese medicine success. And this is why it stood the test of time. So in China, when a person goes in to be treated, they're not just having a symptom dealt with, pain in their arm or joint, headache. It's where the Chinese practitioner will ask all forms of questions about a person's life. So it's more than body, it's mind and spirit. And in China, these are not separable. So to be in good health in China, a person must have a good spirit and pay attention to cultivating that spirit. And doctors see people, not diseases, and equate curing disease instead with curing people. So according to this study, quote, good health and longevity are what we pursue. More and more people are concerned about ways to prevent disease and strengthen their bodies, which is the emphasis of what they do. Now, what's this mean in my world, in the world I live in? for a long time, there have been individuals within our society who believe that you cannot be healthy until you're happy. I came to that decision long ago when I traveled around the world, and I found that the healthiest people throughout the world, even those who smoked, like in Italy in the countryside, or chewed cocoa leaves all day in the mountains of Chile, they were happy. They knew the meaning of their life, and they honored it. They knew the importance of their family, and they honored that as well. In none of these cultures were you considered irrelevant because you were older. You didn't see older people abandoned, living alone, just waiting to die as you do in the United States with so many of our millions of senior citizens. To the contrary, everywhere I went in the world, the center of the family was the oldest person. They were the matriarch or patriarch or both. And it was around them that all the other generations gathered. And it was frequently a young person felt more comfortable talking about a problem with their grandfather, grandmother, than they did their own mother or father. And there was always extended input from aunts and uncles. So imagine all those different minds and hearts working to someone's benefit to try to give them insight. In effect, there was always a council of elders. Now, I saw that. I saw the power of that, the joy of that in my own home, where my great uncle, he was the patriarch, and every Sunday everybody would go to his house and we'd have a dinner, and all of us younger people would eat in the kitchen, and everybody else would eat, the adults at the table, and then afterwards we'd go to a movie for a quarter, and then they would play canasta and socialize. But during that whole process, they were not just socializing. They were looking at the issues that anyone had and coming to some consensus about how to handle them. And I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I asked my mom, I said, why is it you always go there every single week? She said, well, it's to honor the family. So my father and my mother had a big family, huge on both sides. And anytime there was ever a problem, that's where it was taken. And it was only when my great uncle died and my mother took over and she held together, and when she died, there was never again another one of those, never a meeting. No one ever got together for anything. So in every environment, there's always a charismatic person that attracts the energy, that acts as the go-to person. Without that charismatic person who helps solidify an institution, a business, a family, then you'll have it falling apart. And that's what was so important in my travels around the world. There was always multiple people who would be a part of these extended families. No matter how dirt poor they could be, they still find a reason to find happiness even in their poverty. It shows that they were appreciating the spiritual qualities of life. So when I came back to the United States after my many journeys, that's when I realized that we're thinking that taking a medication or a vitamin or a colonic or yoga, this piecemeal, spiritual, materialistic approach to health simply wasn't working. I mean, the most angry people I ever remember at any lecture, and I've done over 5,000 lectures, was when I brought together some of the world's leading spiritual teachers to do a workshop for a whole day, from 8 in the morning till 8 at night, 12 hours, on spiritual healing. And I remember the arguments people had, wanting to get the right seats and the yelling at each other and screaming at each other. And I walked out before the doors opened, and it was packed. And I think we did it at Robert F. Kennedy High School. That was the largest venue we could find. And I said, friends, we're here for a day of spirituality. You're screaming at each other and cursing. Yeah, well, I got to go. Well, I got to go. And then I remember filming a yoga class and how beautiful it all went. And then the moment the class was over, just as an intuitive thought, I told my cinematographer, go downstairs and just keep the camera rolling right outside. And sure enough, there you see it, coming out, getting on the phone, yelling at people, lighting up cigarettes. But in that yoga studio, they were in a different place, Well, then who are they? Are they the person that's screaming to someone on the telephone, or are they a person who's deep breathing and going through that relaxation? The trouble is they are that person on the street, and they're trying to compensate the anxiety, the anger, the pain, the frustration they have by taking a yoga class or maybe running off to do meditation. And you see this all the time. It only matters if you live that same yoga mindset throughout the day, or if you went away to a retreat, then you came back and you used the same energy you learned at the retreat and experienced there throughout the whole day. Otherwise, it's just this duality, this hypocrisy. Wanting to be something we're not willing to surrender, it's opposite. And then being confused when good things happen or bad things happen to supposedly good people. So you want to be healthy, be happy. And that's what the Chinese have known, and the Ayurvedic doctors in India have known, and the Bushmen of the Kalahari have known for centuries. We just haven't figured it out here. Finally, from Health and Nutrition, anti-diabetic effects found in citrus food and juices. Here's what this is. This is very good. This was a study where they tested two citrus constituents using human liver cells, and they found that the two natural compounds increase the uptake of glucose among the cells. Now, this study confirms previous research that pointed to the possibility that these citrus constituents may be helpful for reducing blood sugar for those who are at risk of type 2 diabetes and suffer from poor glucose control and high glucose tolerance. And other research has found that these compounds also regulate liver enzymes, and that is good to help your liver. And the citrus, as well as in this case, it was two flavonoids in the citrus fruit called huya, H-U-Y-O-U. And they also found it in grapefruit. One more reason to have grapefruit juice, but use the whole grapefruit, the skin, the seed, the whole thing. If it's a little tart for you, put a little bit of Manuka honey in, which is also very good for you. I'm Gary Noll. This is our Talk Back program. I always do the first 20 minutes of the show on health and healing and nutrition. Then I open it up for your calls, so you have a chance to call in and share your comments, thoughts, points of view. There's no censorship here. And I also want to take just a moment to thank the people for spreading the word. We're making a major effort now to help get the law passed in California to say yes for labeling all foods that are genetically engineered. Monsanto and DuPont and Bayer, they have tens of millions of dollars to put in this campaign to confuse people. We don't have anything except Jeffrey Smith, who has a documentary out, and I'm putting a documentary out. We're putting it out in chapters, 15 minutes, to all the people in California who are actually going to be voting. If you look at Gary Noll TV, you'll see it, and Roy of Hollywood and KPFK is promoting it out there as well. And we'll just share the information, person to person, word of mouth. The mainstream media, mainstream corporations, with some exception, only are able to get people's attention with massive advertising campaigns. They've completely lost the understanding of how people can talk with one another about their perceptions and experiences and get them to watch a film, listen to a radio show, read an article. So we're doing it the old-fashioned way, but an awful lot of people responded, over a million. So we want to thank all of you for participating at the grassroots level in this effort to take on a million Davids against the colossus out there of Monsanto. And we'll know shortly enough if our efforts have been enough. Now we're going to take a brief break and call now, because I'm going to go to our telephones at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment.
took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
With arms open wide, I threw away my pride. I sacrificed for you, dedicate my life to you.
Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Taking calls now on our talkback segment. Also, we're going to, let me just mention that for those of you who are terminally ill and you'd like my input, which is free, I've never charged a human being in my entire life for counseling them, you must have a letter from your doctor explaining that your condition is terminal, and give it to my assistant in my office in New York, and then I'll schedule time to be able to see you. We have an awful lot of terminal people. But for everyone else, and there are so many other people who have aches and pains and are needing to make some lifestyle changes but don't always know how, I have hired four really talented people with a diversity of backgrounds, from a PhD, from and number one in her class, from Albert Einstein School of Medicine, Yeshiva University, background in psychology and behavior modification, to registered dietitians, nutritionist from Columbia and Caltech and all these other places. And I'm even hiring another one. They can help you, and it's free. It's a public service. Tens of thousands have been helped this way. And otherwise, all those people come to my office or call me, and I can't see everyone. There's only so many hours in the day I can see people, and I want to see those that are most in need of that. For everyone else, just give a call to 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, and you can drop in 7 days a week from 11 till 7 and get some help. Someone will see you. All right, and there's no charge. 89th and Broadway. Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Harry, I have a pop quiz for you tonight. This comes to you from Doug. He says there's a group that were some of the most prolific writers of hit songs in history, and they happen to be backup singers for the Funk Brothers. Very few people know who wrote all the great hits. Do you know who they are?
They were the Funk Brothers.
Oh, okay.
No, the Funk Brothers were the backup singers to Marvin Gaye, what the music we just played, and the Shirelles, and Martha Reese and the Vandellas, and all, at least 50 different groups. They did at least, I'm going to guess, 200 to 250 songs. People don't know them unless you're in the business, but there are some of them still alive today. I don't know how many. And I had an idea not long ago, and I may actually in the next 12 months do it. When we go to watch an entertainer from, you know, one of these Golden Hall of Notes or whoever it may be, or the Four Tops, frequently their voices are just sharp as can be, their presentations perfected, and you have to ask, why did they stop making hits? What happened? Even the disco hits, what happened? And it's a combination of things. In fact, when people go to see a Golden Oldie show, the newer tracks that someone may have laid down, they frequently don't get any response because people don't have an emotional relationship with a new song. It's the emotional relationship that brings you back to a time when most people think life was simpler. You were younger, you were in love, or you were dating, or you were doing something, and that's what we associate certain music with, and that sticks with us forever, for our whole life. But then why shouldn't there be an opportunity for these people to do something again, even in the same venue? If we like that much doo-wop, or we like that much disco, or we like that much rockabilly, why not do it again? I don't like any music today. I can't take the music today. A, I think the lyrics are frequently just hate-filled lyrics and rageful lyrics, and they're frequently inarticulate, and the music just doesn't have that uniqueness. There are other times in my life where I've appreciated the music, and I'm thinking, why not have recording artists from the past create new music, new but still in the same theme, and release it as new doo-wop? Now that hasn't been done. I think at the very least, if people knew that there were people doing songs in the same way they had once done, just new music. Because otherwise, we go through these stages, say, okay, well, we're all done with that. Now we're all done with that. Now what's next? Why be done with something that we really enjoyed? So I'm going to work on maybe putting together a studio in New York and invite the people, like the Funk Brothers, to come in and lay down some tracks and see if we can't put it out there as a way of rejuvenating some of their music and career and their creativity. Otherwise, when you're no longer in that spotlight, all the light goes out. The phone doesn't ring. And that's unfortunate. I remember once, about 3 years ago, I was at a car auction. I was looking to buy an antique car, which I did, a 57 Chevy convertible, 100-point restoration. It was over in West Palm Beach, and I saw a beautiful car that was for sale. And the auctioneer said, and the man who owns this is such and such, who was ahead of the tokens and did Lion Sleeps Tonight. So I bought the car, and we had a conversation. And I asked, what's it like when you've had several big hits, as the tokens did, and then nothing happens? He said, well, you begin to get a reality check about what life is. And he said, it happens to all the people. Unless you get on a circuit of going around occasionally every 3 or 4 or 5 years and doing the doo-wops, it's over. And you have to go out and earn a living elsewhere. And all the way back to my home, I was writing, I was thinking about what he said. How many writers, dancers, actors, singers have a moment to shine, share with us their unique and beautiful gifts, and then because of the vagaries of the market or who's getting the bucks to promote them, they're out and someone else has taken their place and we just forget about them. And I always thought that it was so unfair. So I think that we should establish artisans' villages around the United States where all people do is just create. And for the right to live there, in security, they create and share it with us over the internet in some other fashion where we can all benefit from it. Some music or artistry in common, the commons in arts. Just a thought. See what you triggered? Get me thinking here about things. Then I forget I'm doing a radio show. What else do you have there before? Well, hold on, Luann. Let's go over and say hello to Michael from Hicksville. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Gary. How are you tonight?
Doing great, thank you.
I'm calling to ask if you may have a protocol for toxic exposure, neurological damage due to toxic exposure.
What kind of exposure did you have?
I was exposed to a polytoxin from a coral.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. All right, and what were the outcomes from that?
Well, it would be really extensive for me to tell you everything because I've been disabled for 2 months now from it, and I'm still recovering.
Okay, well, let me go through what I do when I have someone who is toxic and see if this helps you. Okay, Michael?
Okay.
All right, first, you want to see that most Americans are toxic. About 70% of all Americans get medical or dental x-rays in an average year. And those take a look inside the body. I'm opposed to ordinary x-rays. But if it tells you something's wrong, we have to pay attention to it. I look at aluminum toxicity, arsenic poisoning, cadmium toxicity, chemical exposure, copper toxicity, environmental toxicity, foodborne and waterborne disease, lead poisoning, mercury from your teeth, from and nickel, and all of these end up creating an excessive body burden, one that interferes with the mitochondria, which is the energy-making factories of our cells. And a lot of these are going into the brain. And when they get to the brain, they can damage the mitochondria, which causes the little mitochondria cells that produce the energy to open up. And then the internal contents flow out, and that is called mega-channeling. And then a person simply loses the ability to have a mind that's really thinking because it's handling a toxic overload. So the first thing I would do is I would do chelation therapy, and I would do it three ways. I would do it rectal, suppositories. I would do it oral, and I would do it intravenous, because they have three different ways of taking these heavy toxins out of the body. Then I would start to rebuild the cell's integrity in the brain. So it wouldn't matter what the manifestations were. I would just go about helping everything possible in the brain. And there's I would put a person on a very high juicing diet, lots and lots of juices, and then raw juices, green juices, dark green juices, because that's going to make all the difference, because the chlorophyll in the juices alone are anti-inflammatory. And anytime you've had toxic reactions, you've had inflammation in the brain, so you want to turn off all inflammation in the brain. Now, you have cytokines, C-Y-T-O, kinds, K-I-N-E-S. They attack the threatening germ and repair damaged tissue. But what happens is when you've had an environmental exposure, you have too much of it. And then that'll end up causing immobility and weight loss and weakening of your muscle, and it really destroys your power to fight illnesses. So you want to be able to turn off the cytokines. Otherwise, you can end up with all forms of cardiovascular disease there, and partly due to inflammation in the lining of the arteries. So I would look at the B complex and vitamin B12 in particular, 2,000 micrograms a day of methylated B12. I would look at vitamin C intravenous and oral. Oral in buffered form, about 20,000 a day. Intravenous, probably 100,000 a day. The essential fatty acids, coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and evening primrose oil and fish oil all turn off inflammation in the body and the brain. Grapeseed extract, proteolytic enzymes aid in turning off inflammation. Wheatgrass juice, which is very high in superoxide dismutase that reduces inflammation and infection. Zinc also helps control healing and turns off inflammation. And bromelain, brome, B-R-O-M-E, lane, L-A-I-N. That has really strong anti-inflammatory properties. Garlic also at 5,000 milligrams, which is a couple bulbs. That's good as well. Silica, horsetail, alfalfa, aloe vera juice, bilberry, boswellia, curcumin, cat's claw, cayenne, devil's claw, echinacea, podiarco, stinging nettles, and white willow bark. All of those are important because they stop the damage that is being done and allow the body to start the healing process. And then you go in and start rebuilding the damaged parts of the brain. Glycerol, phosphorylcholine, phosphatidylserine, acetyl-L-carnitine, and L-carnosine. Those are just some that you can use. And also keep in mind that when you've had any kind of chemical poisoning, you need the free-form amino acids. It helps your liver function, and you need glutathione pushes. And that also helps. and L-cysteine and methionine are important in that process. So that would at least get you started. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Let's say hello to Peter. Hi, Peter. From a boat. Where's the boat at, Peter?
In Sausalito, California, right. In Sausalito, California right now. We were in Connecticut, too, in East Norwalk, and we attended your health support class of the fall of 2000 into 2001, but we could not complete it because we had to sail up to and motor up to Toronto for the work season in the film industry. Anyhow, my wife has Alzheimer's disease, Gary, and I got a natural medicine doctor here in Sausalito to, the neighboring township, Corte Madera, whatever, to get the protocol from your office. And Carolyn has been on that for about 6 weeks now. I don't expect anything to happen overnight, but nothing. It hasn't really improved, and we are currently waiting for a second post-provocative urinalysis. Her first post-provocative urinalysis showed lead 1 millimeter from being off the scale, but the usual suspects like aluminum and so on are within reason. What is outside of reference is barium and cadmium and thallium, whereas mercury is only a millimeter or two, I have no other way of explaining it, out of the reference.
Let me explain this. In this coming January, I'll be working with a group specifically on Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I heard you mention that, yeah.
And people in California, in Washington, D.C., and in New York can participate because I'm going to connect them through video conferencing. We have to have all the medical records in advance for a person to be accepted in, and it's lifestyle behavior modification only. Now, my...
And what only, sorry?
Lifestyle and behavior modification. Behavioral modification. My experience with Alzheimer's, including the people that we've helped and who've virtually reversed their Alzheimer's, and you can see the video up on the website of that, it took about 16 to 26 months. And before you see anything, you have to understand what you're not seeing. What you're not seeing is first turning down the inflammation, and then trying to repair the DNA inside the cells. And you have to do that gradually, not all at once. You have to build into a model that you're using gradually intensifying levels. It's no different when I'm working with a person with age-defining illness. I don't start off where they're taking a large amount of vitamin C. I start off gradual, and then a month later, give them a little more, a month later, a little more. And the viral load starts coming down about month 8, 9, or 10, not initially, because you're trying to do all the other, undo the damage that's been done prior to that. So that's what's important. Now, if you're looking at the acetylcholine, you start it once a day, but you'll be building up to 3 times a day. And acetyl-L-carnitine, again, you start at 500 milligrams once a day, you'll build up to 3 times a day, and that enhances brain metabolism and slows down the deterioration of memory and reduces the production of free radicals. And boron, you start at 1 milligram for the first 3 months, go to 2 milligrams and 3 milligrams. That improves the brain and memory function substantially. And coenzyme A, which you have to take with coenzyme Q10, and you start at lower amounts of coenzyme Q10, but when you start getting up 2,000-3,000 milligrams a day, then you start to really see a difference because it increases the oxygenation of the cells and it's involved in the generation of cellular energy, ATP or adenosine triphosphate. And the methylated folic acid controls your homocysteine levels. And the higher the homocysteine level, the higher the level of damage to Alzheimer's patients. And almost never does a physician or neurologist ever look at a woman or man's homocysteine level, and they should, because homocysteine, fibrinogen, triglycerides, and C-reactive protein are all connected. And yet these are never tested for. You've got to test for that. Now, phosphatidylserine, you start at 200 milligrams and you build it up. That improves memory. And pycnogenol also passes the blood-brain barrier and protects your brain cells from free radical damage. And grapeseed extract and SAMe, that's also important because that lowers homocysteine levels. And then trimethylglycine, TMG, that assists your body in utilizing B12 and folic acid and vitamin B6, and it helps eliminate toxins and lowers lowers the homocysteine level. So you have to know that you have to do this gradually, and Butcher's Broom promotes, very important, along with ginkgo taken together, and St. John's Wort. All those are together. So what you're doing is you have to look at this in stages. And each stage prepares the body for the next stage. And the detoxification stage is where she's at now. The detoxification stage will take about 9 months to a year. So don't rush it. And let's see what happens, and then you'll get back. Okay? All the best, and send the information in so she can participate in our January program. Peter.
Thank you very much.
All the best to you and to your wife.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's say hello to Monica from Los Angeles. Hi, Monica.
Pat, I'm calling about my cat. She's got two big ulcers in the upper lip, under the upper lip. And what can I do for that? They're not canker sores, but they're huge ulcer kind of things.
But why did she get them? What does the vet say?
She seems to think it's the fleas. And I've been treating with flea things on her skin.
Where did she get the fleas?
She goes outside a little bit, but not too much. It's just the season. They have it out here. Yeah, they don't know. And so she thought maybe some steroids might help or something.
Oh, I definitely wouldn't use steroids on a cat.
You what?
I would never use steroids on a cat.
Oh, okay.
If you want to knock out her immune system, that's one good way to do it.
Wow.
Instead, I would look at a high level of raw diet, knowing the cat's metabolism, which is different than a dog's. I've actually had a vegetarian dog, lived 22 years until it was killed in an accident. But a cat has to have a certain amount of the animal proteins, and I suggest wild salmon and sardines. Also, I would suggest that you start using, if you can get it in her with a dropper, I would get some of the green juices in. And then on the lip itself, I would just put a little bit of colloidal silver so it doesn't get infected. Anything else is going to be a little too harsh on her system. But I would keep away from all processed foods and have it fresh and uncooked. And also, cats tend not to drink much water. I would put some water in a dropper and see that she gets water several times a day. Also, there are natural flea collars you can use that would get rid of the fleas. And you can give her flea shampoo that has some tea tree oil on it, and that generally is very good for getting rid of the fleas. And then you can use a conditioner that will help her skin. And I would also give her a little bit of aloe with vitamin E across the ulcers to help in the healing process. All the best to you. Let's go back again to Luann. Luann, your turn again.
Hi, Gary. So we have Daryl here from Chicago who writes, I work in radio communications, and I download your shows on the weekends to catch up with what I missed. And he says, I love your level of scholarship and objectivity. And he says, I admire the way that you have put together Progressive Radio Network. And he says, it seems to me that the only way you can have a successful radio station is where people actually work together with cross promotions of each other's work and each other's information. And he says, I never heard that when I listened to WBAI in New York. They seem to be in constant conflict. And I can tell you as a member of the local station board in the past that he is spot on about that.
And the question he asks is, do you ever see this changing?
I'll answer it philosophically. Are you familiar with I.F. Stone?
No.
Okay, he was a journalist's journalist back in the 1940s, earlier, a little later. And he said, every emancipation has in it the seeds of a new slavery, and every truth easily becomes a lie. And part of the problem is that, and even Paul Tillich said, the passion for truth is silenced by answers which have the weight of undisputed authority. Now, put those two together, and what do we have? At any given time, we start off with an ideal of what should be. But along the way, individuals interface and their own persona, the weight and power of their own determination, can take an ideal and alter it, take it in a different direction. And in the case of many of the non-commercial radio stations, even PBS, you can see the imprint of different people. Now, people frequently don't come alone. They come with some baggage. They come with ideologies. And they have a chance to get their ideology heard or seen. And so they push their agenda. The audience is not aware of this. And then in order to be a part of this, you have to bend your own will towards them. And then one day, a whole radio station can sound very Marxist or communist or capitalist. Just listen to Fox and hear some of the people. I'm sure that they're well-intentioned for their message, and they believe in it. I wouldn't dispute that at all. But the fact that their message is frequently hate-filled and destructive seems to escape them and frequently their audience, because their audience then adapts to it and looks forward to getting more of that particular ideology each day. And along the way, something happens that no one's prepared for. Things change. So if you're still fighting the 1970s battles today, then you're out of touch with all the younger people today. And then you're out of touch with the seniors today who can remember that but no longer interested. They've got other things. And then you're faced with, yeah, but comrades, we're still holding on, you know, to... And someone's saying, move on. It's a new day. Become relevant again. And so those who succeed in life almost always come to a place where they have to surrender every single story they have. Surrender the story, surrender the energy, and look around and say, okay, here's what I got to focus on today, and change direction. And if they can do that, then they can have a new and meaningful purpose, whether it's a BAI or Pacifica or NPR or PBS or anyone else. But that's hard to do because it's no longer one person. It's groups of people get together. And that whatever control they have, they don't want to surrender. They don't want yesterday's story to go away because they don't have a story for today. They don't have answers for today. They just have their anger and their highly self-righteous nature from yesterday. And it's time to change the story. Surrender the past and enter into a new stage of life. If a radio station can't do it, it will not have an audience and it will cease to exist. And everybody will blame everything except the truth. We're in 2012. And the station was still programming and broadcasting if this was 1976. Hope that answers your question. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.